time once again for Truth About Markets in London on Resonance with Max and Stacy. I'm Max. This is Stacy.
Hi.
Hey, you know what?
What, honey? Tell us.
I wanted to sing a French song made famous by the singing nuns. Dominique, I am a Frenchie nun. I eat cheese all day and I pray to Jesus and I watch the FT too. Huh? What?
You read the FT.
Yes, I read the FT. I'm reading the FT right now. You know, first of all, just to give people who are joining us for the first time, 5 years ago when we started this show, we begged people around the world in Tunisia, Egypt, and other nations, Greece, Ireland, the UK, to revolt, to insurrect in their countries, to effect a regime change due to the fact that their local banks are connected to a global banking system, which is hell-bent on stealing all your money. Now they've stolen all your money, and people are revolting, as we encourage them to do. So the global insurrection against banker occupation must continue unabated until we start seeing some retribution, until we start seeing, as Paul B. Farrell of MarketWatch Dow Jones said last week, he, not me, these are not my words, but Paul Farrell's word, he's calling for a new reign of terror where bankers' heads are chopped off. Now, we've been saying this for quite some time.
I think those are your words for him. He said,
I paraphrase.
He said what Ben Bernanke was operating was an economic reign of terror. So he was chopping all of our economic heads off.
Well, you know, history is replete with misreadings of communiques that end up changing history.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah.
I think Marie Antoinette, she didn't really say, let them eat cake. She said, my neck would look nice with a guillotine blade wrapped around it. And that's what happened. The translation got all messed up. Now, going forward, there is a growing sense of despair around the world. And it's quite fascinating, Stacy, that in the United States of America, that landmass squeezed between Canada and Mexico, home of the drug-addled, obese Disney film-watching troglodyte morons who vote for the same corporate shills to give money away to the same corrupt bankers who then elect more corporate shills, vis-a-vis the mindless mouthpieces on Fox News and other corporate-owned media. It's incredible that when the global insurrection against banker occupation flares up in places like Madison, Wisconsin, and Ohio, they see it as a local union issue, and they fail to understand that it's a global insurrection. And it's funny for this because the commentators say, well, the people in Ohio are like the people in Cairo. They should be ashamed of themselves. Anyone who talks like that, hello, Mr. Guillotine. Hello, Mr. Guillotine. Ooh, I lost my head and there's a puddle of blood.
That's not a nice song. In fact, you probably hurt some people's ears out there. You know, there was an occupation of the Barclays banks across the UK by UK Uncut. They were occupying banks today.
UK Uncut. Yeah, they are doing God's work. You know, they're getting in the way and jamming up the machinery of the banking heist. And we'll let that ring out, I suppose. Some poor slob is trying to contact us, but we're just going to let that phone ring in the background.
Only one person has that phone number. I can call her back, though.
Oh, really? I thought it might have been Alex Jones.
Oh, that's right. He doesn't do a show on Saturday, though.
No, it wouldn't be Alex Jones. That's the bat phone, the Alex Jones bat phone. I think he's the only one in the world except for one other that has that number. Ding dong, hello, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, the uncut. Uncut, yeah. You know, they're doing God's work. They're getting in the way of the banking occupation. They're gumming up the works. And, of course, the hero of the hero of the hero's hero, Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd.
Oh my God, yeah.
They declared victory in the Southern Ocean Day, VSO, because the Japanese fishermen have beat a hasty retreat. Now, This is an example for all activists around the world, is you got to get in their face and you got to push back against the occupying forces. Isn't this true, Stacey?
Well, yeah, that's pretty amazing that he managed to chase an entire fleet out of the Antarctic Ocean, the South Ocean? What
are they Southern called? Ocean, right?
Southern Ocean. It's truly amazing. I mean, how many ships were there down there? It's something like four attack ships, the harpoon ships, and the big factory ship. Mm-hmm. So he managed to chase all of those out of there. You've got to give him some credit for that. It's not like it's just digital activism that guy did. That's pretty dangerous to go go down there and fool around down in the Antarctic.
That's old school style. You know, he really went after them, got in their face. This wasn't Facebook or Twitter or WikiLeaks. He just saw the blood in the water coming out of these poor whales and said, someone's got to defend these whales. And if no one defends the whales, it's just a matter of them coming after us, as they are all over the world. Of course, the social unrest is a direct result of the loss of in the U.S. Stacey, I don't know if you saw this or not, but there's a law being bandied about now, a bill trying to repeal worker child labor laws. They want to be able to hire children to enter the labor force down to 14 years of age now.
I didn't see that, no.
Yeah, it was a pretty big story. They're trying to bring back child labor, and of course, they'll keep going. It'll be down to 10-year-old labor and child labor. Of course, their little children's fingers are good for polishing little bullet casings, you know. We need them to get back into the factories. So child labor is coming back. Total loss of all pensions have been stolen. Total loss of bargaining and collective bargaining. In Madison, Wisconsin, the new Republican administration overnight got rid of 30, 40 years of progress made in collective bargaining. And of course, in the U.S., they vilify labor and they vilify workers and teachers and policemen as being somehow leeches on society. When the popular media goes down, that goes with this. It goes back, of course. It picked up speed under Reagan, during the Reagan-Thatcher years, when Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers in the U.S. And when you get rid of the people making middle-class jobs, you get rid of the buffer between the predatory, kleptocratic, rich C-words and the peasants and serfs who are going to be working 24 hours a day, no benefits, no pension, no medical, nothing.
Well, Max, but the other thing about this is the concept that Noam Chomsky introduced many years ago of manufacturing consent. So the population itself also is against their fellow population actually having any dignity or working for a living or their labor having any value. And, you know, there's some information, if you want to find it, emerging about this very frightening corporatism meets military-industrial complex going on, this infiltration of websites and social media in order to influence and create opinion. Now, we first saw that one with the Green Revolution, the Twitter Revolution so-called Twitter revolution about Iran. And it took a while, but once it started to click that all the tweets sounded very bizarrely similar, it was quite easy to find out that they were actually manufactured fake accounts. But they're working hard on developing these into more polished, sort of, more genuine seeming fake virtual people.
Right.
And I was reading this from Washington's blog, who is on Zero Hedge, and they were talking about this new article that came out, this new information that came out that CENTCOM announced in 2008 that a team of employees would be, quote, engaging in bloggers who are posting inaccurate or untrue information, as well as bloggers who are posting incomplete information. The Air Force is now also engaging bloggers. Indeed, an Air Force spokesman said, "We obviously have many more concerns regarding cyberspace than a typical social media user." So it turns out that they're looking for, they're outsourcing to private companies this notion of creating fake entities online. And they're working on technologies to make it better and better and seem more legitimate, and assigning unique IP addresses to each person so that whenever this person writes online, it looks legitimate to anybody who might want to investigate. Because right now it's not that legitimate if you even do a little cursory viewing of so-called online entities.
Right. So they, to influence public opinion, they flood the comments sections and the blog sites with automated blogs and comments that are programmed to influence the public opinion. Now, we know this is true from what we call the Koch bots. The Koch brothers, of course, are financed through hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even billion or more dollars, to convince the people that the folks who got doctors to smoke cigarettes on TV in the 50s and talk about the health benefits of smoking cigarettes, those same marketing agencies and front groups have been hired to convince people that pouring billions and billions of tons of carbon into the atmosphere is good for your health. Those people, they show up every time we write on our site, maxkaiser.com, anything like anthropogenic global warming deniers are contemptible. This triggers through the databases an assault of the flying monkeys come through the air, like those flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz. They come flying through cyberspace, and they start automatically putting bogus robot-generated posts.
Yeah, but Max, you can see a much more clear, pristine example of this. That you have to. There are some real people who have bought the propaganda, and they post things like that. I'm talking about very clear, obvious to see. Anybody on Earth, any human being without any ideology can see this example with us. And that is, go to any of our YouTubes, go to any of our Kaiser reports where people came to our site on the YouTube and they mentioned crash JP Morgan buy silver. Every single one of those comments is marked as spam, and it is immediately marked as spam. Right. Now, this is exactly what these enterprises do. And you know, the reason why this notion of these cognitive infiltrator type fake virtual people is right now in the news is because Bank of America was looking to hire somebody like this to discredit WikiLeaks. Now, if Bank of America was doing it, is JP Morgan doing it? Now, go to our most recent YouTube and write some comments like that. Say, crash JP Morgan, buy silver, and see how fast it gets spammed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's really sophisticated. It's really remarkable. It is an information war, for sure. And with the millions of people on sites blogging and creating ways to open up communication channels, you know, it's been responded by the military. Industrial folks complex, if you will, with their ways to counter that in this information war. And I noticed this. If you say crash JP Morgan buy silver, it immediately gets marked as spam. Because on the YouTube, if more than two or three people click on the mark as spam button, it gets more or less deleted, right? It says marked as spam and you don't see the comment anymore. That's one little trick, right?
I'm not sure, but you know, this is something I noticed. Anytime it happens, all you have to do is write a comment, crash JP Morgan, buy silver, and it immediately gets marked as spam.
Right, so it's,
I don't know if it takes 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 or 20.
Right, but there's an algorithm there.
They hire people. They hire people.
When they know that there's a threshold after which the comment is marked as spam, and so it's the algorithm is hacked. And it's the information is manipulated in this way. Now, in finance, we see it working also when they talk about high-frequency trading on the New York Stock Exchange. They flood the exchange with what are called quote stuffing or bogus orders to try to make the price go up or down. And so they're affecting, that's financial propaganda, because, and we see it right now, remarkably, even though the volume of trading on the exchange coming from real accounts, non-programmed trading, non-robotic trading, is at 10-year, 15-year lows. The stock market's making new highs, new 2.5, new 3.5-year highs. It's moving toward a new all-time high in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, even though the underlying volume is it's a 10, 15-year lows, because the prices are being moved up by robotic trading. And the robotic trading does this by hacking into the algorithms that are the basis for what's called price discovery, and they manipulate it. So I guess what we could say is that the mechanism for truth discovery in the blogosphere and in the journalistic space, the algorithm of weighing opinion and comments and facts and the truth, has been hacked by these bots, and they do quote stuffing, the equivalent. They do the technological equivalent to influence what Chomsky, called manufacturing consent. So you see this happening both in the financial space and in the non-financial space, which, of course, the non-financial space serves the financial space, because one of the reasons you've got this global insurrection against banking occupation is because folks are rebelling against the fact that the economy has collapsed, but the technological ability to cream nickels and dimes off the top of the way that the system is architected is growing exponentially, and it's in the hands of the top 1% elite who control the means of making markets. So we've gone from a post really Marxist ideal of the discussion of capitalism in terms of who controls the means of production, because the means of production, the factory and the workers, has been eclipsed by the means of the market maker. Who can make the market? Who can create the price? And whoever controls the price is going to win. Now, according to the Western free market capitalists, there's a thing called the invisible hand that makes the price and makes the market. And it's beautiful and godlike, which theoretically, if it were properly implemented and regulated, it could perform very well. But unfortunately, right now, with the shadow banking system, as Gordon Brown called it, and the derivatives market and the futures markets being as horribly manipulated as they are, you don't have any true price discovery anymore. The prices for things represent no intrinsic tie to an underlying value. And getting back to Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd, he calls it the economics of extinction. And this is being applied to all flora and fauna of the natural world. People who overfish in Japan, who are now causing the bluefin tuna to go extinct, they're doing so in the knowledge that in the freezer back at the pier, they've got a few hundred pounds of bluefin tuna, and the price of bluefin tuna is going, $100,000, $150,000 for one of these bluefin tuna, and the price keeps going up as the species becomes extinct. The price of tigers and lions and walrus and elephants, the parts that are taken from these animals, the price is going up because the species are becoming extinct. How much, we're talking in 10, 20 years where people are going to be like, my God, that's a real human eyeball. The humans became extinct. That human eyeball is worth $30 million at Christie's. It's one of the last remaining human eyeballs on planet Earth. Look, it still has the muscles attached to it. It's incredible. There's only 5 of these left. They become like Fabergé eggs. And of course, everyone that's left are these avatars and robots and trading robots who are trading with themselves. And, artificial intelligence, Stacey, has gotten pretty advanced and is evolving much faster than any other species in the world. So at some point, I don't think people are going to notice that humans have effectively become extinct. I mean, they will, once they create artificial synthetic sperm and artificial synthetic eggs, then it's all basically digital at that point. And the wet space, the meat space, the analog space that was around for the human history, that's approximately Homo sapien history, 200,000 years, that chapter will be over and we'll be into a post-human species. It'll be some kind of cyborg era.
Well, that was a very long
sentence. Is the show
sentence.
Over?
Okay. That took
Thank
my...
you and good night. Hey, we're going to Beirut next week. That'll be exciting.
Yes, we are. And
I'm raising money right now for my Get Max Out of the Kidnapping Kidnappers Fund. If you want to send money to this fund, release Max from the kidnappers. Send your money. But
I don't think the people are going to send money. I think they're going to be too excited to see the videos.
They're going
to
be sending money saying, please kidnap Max. We're tired of this guy. He blabs all the time. He never shuts up. He doesn't listen to anybody. I don't care that he's been right in 99% of his predictions for the past 20 years. He's got a better track record than any prognosticator or forecaster in the world. I don't care. Kidnap him, throw him in jail, and, we're sick of him.
Anyway, you know what? You were talking about prices and all that stuff. I kind of forgot because it started 10 minutes ago.
I took a nap like 20 minutes ago. I'm just on autopilot now. I don't even know what I said. What did I say? Where am I?
I'm going to inflate his back. And
are you going to inflate me? What am I, like a rubber chicken?
Okay. Now, a lot of people out there are going to be wondering, okay, Max, it's more than 21 minutes into the show. And you haven't once mentioned silver.
Yeah, what about it?
Which?
Okay, here's my take on silver, okay? I got another 5-minute rant for you.
Oh my God, here we go, okay? For those who weren't watching the charts on Friday, silver nearly... It was heading towards 33. When did it get up to 32.85 or something like that?
Yeah, 32.88 was the closing number. So
it started the day in the low 31 or high 30s?
It's a screaming higher. And although the stock market's making new highs, it's down compared to silver, of course. So net.
So what's going on? What's going on? What? What's
going
on with silver?
I was
going
to say something. Here's what's going on. You know,
I'll see you guys in 10 minutes.
The
okay?
G20 is meeting, as you know, here in Europe, trying to figure out. They keep talking about rebalancing the economy. Well, they have to rebalance the economy because the bank stole trillions of dollars. They left a gaping hole in the economy, and they need to figure out how they're going to deal with this because right now you've got the... economic equivalent of wind shear. You've got the deflationary forces of collapsing house prices and wages and massive unused capacity utilization versus the other opposing force of skyrocketing food prices and energy prices that are being helped along by the additional printing of trillions by the central banks. Again, to help their banker friends, even though it's causing poverty in one end and an extraordinarily plutocratic wealth aggregation on the top end, and they're openly creating this gap, or as the Financial Times today called it, and you gotta love the Financial Times, they refer to the class war that's going on, the currency war, the open assault of the central banks against humanity. The calling for, a reign of terror by Dow Jones Market Watch, Paul Farrell. They refer to the Financial Times today as the, quote, livelihood gap. Yes, it's a livelihood gap. So anyway, so you've got this need to rebalance, right? So what does this mean? Here's what it means. It means that, as has been talked about on this show and others for a while, they have to come up with a global currency. The global currency will be based on the special drawing rights. The special drawing right will be expanded from the current usage of approximately $500 billion to $10, $20, $30, $40 trillion. Ultimately, it'll reach $100 trillion, which is the number they set at Davos. They needed to create a credit facility to rebalance the globe's economy of $100 trillion. That is 2 times the current global GDP. The 2 times the current output of the entire globe is 50 trillion. So they say we need 50 trillion of this new credit facility to rebalance or recalibrate the global economy. So the SDR will be expanded to fill that role. They'll rebrand it. The special drawing right doesn't sound very sexy, does it? So they'll call it, rebrand it the global dollar, the globex, the global dollar, or something, the global pound. And then... this will be very similar, Stacey, to what happened after World War II. If you remember, after World War II, after the war, they had to redo the global economy. the IMF and the World Bank got together and they said, okay, we're going to create a system here at Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, where all the world's currencies are going to be convertible into the dollar, and the dollar is going to be convertible into gold. And that system went from 1945 to 1971, when Nixon, to pay for Vietnam, took the U.S. off the gold window, as it was known, and he had a free-floating currency system, which is now, since 71 until today, all the central banks, instead of maintaining fiscal or monetary discipline, simply kept printing more money until you had the credit Ponzi scheme collapse of 2008 at peak credit. And current damage, the current need to refinance this $100 trillion fandango with this new credit facility. And this new credit facility will, of course, be tied to some degree to gold. So what will the ratio of the SDR, global SDR, $100 trillion tranche be tied to gold? Will it be 10%? Okay, let's talk about that for a second. If it's 10%, that means that $100 trillion... Well, how much gold is there in the world today? There's about 150,000 tons of gold that's held by central banks and individuals around the world. Let's use that number for this discussion. At the current market price, it's about $4 trillion. So let's see, 10% of 100 trillion is 10 trillion. So 4 goes into 10, two and a half times, roughly? Yeah,
two times.
2 times, let's say. So 2 times the current price of gold, which is $1,400, that means $2,800 per gold right there. Just if they use 10%. But what if they go to 50%? Okay, so that would mean, for 50 trillion. So you multiply that time again. So now you're talking $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 an ounce for gold. What if they use 100%? You're talking $18,000, $19,000 an ounce per gold. Well, this is definitely in the cards. It's baked into the cake. It's not even worth discussing as a debatable point anymore. It's happening. So, which brings us back to silver. So silver traditionally trades 20 to 1 ratio to gold. So at gold at $10,000 an ounce, of course, you're talking $500 silver. If the exchange rate is 20,000 ounces per gold, dollars per gold, then you're talking $1,000 per ounce silver. So the current price for silver is 33, and people say, oh gosh, should I buy some now? Well, it's going to a minimum of 500. So you've got a move from 33 to 500. If that's appealing to you, then you really have only one answer. If that's not appealing to you, then you're a moron. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the gold standard, and I want to bring that up now because there was an article in thestreet.com. Which is one of the, that's where James Cramer is, right?
Uh-huh.
Here's the headline. A Chinese gold standard? China's grab for gold is accelerating at a rapid pace, and it's raising questions about the country's ultimate intentions. China consumed 175.2 tons of gold in the fourth quarter of 2010, bringing its grand total for the year to 579.5 tons, or 18.5 million ounces, according to the World Gold Council. That's a lot of gold. The U.S., in comparison, consumed 233.3 tons in 2010. So China consumed more than twice as much gold as the U.S. did. It's unknown how much of that gold was consumed by citizens or its central bank, but the question still remains, what will China do with all that gold? There is a controversial theory percolating in the gold community that China wants the yuan to become the world's reserve currency and is buying gold and silver in order to do it. A Chinese gold standard? The idea is staggering and not to mention fraught with difficulties. China's central bank holds 1,054 tons of gold, officially anyway, about 1.8% of its total reserves. China holds 2.85 trillion in foreign reserves, which means the country would need to buy roughly 66,000 tons of gold to fully back its currency. Even if the country upped the ante to just 3%, the country would need to buy 1,000 tons. Technically, a full gold standard isn't an option because under the IMF's First Amendment to Article 4 of Agreement ratified in 1978, participating countries are not allowed to peg their currency to gold. But that doesn't mean that China won't try to legitimize its currency.
Well, it's a currency war, and China's got $3 trillion in reserves, over $1.5 trillion in U.S. dollars. If the U.S. can't pay back that money, then the law doesn't apply. They simply say, well, all the contracts are null and void. You already saw last week the big story that came out through another WikiLeaks leak was that China was directly with the SEC how to shape laws in the U.S. to favor China. So you have a foreign power now writing laws in the U.S. And, of course, under the new election laws in America, thanks to the Supreme Court decision of last year, corporations can run candidates for president and foreign powers can run candidates for president in the United States. And there's a big story out of how the one of Obama's ambassadors, I think, or somebody working in the Obama administration with China has left, presumably to follow
Yeah, he wants to run for president, I guess.
He's going to run for president against. This is a guy who's been in the pocket of the Chinese government now for years. So now he's going to run for president. He's going to be financed by the Chinese government. So the other thing is that in terms of China going to a gold standard, you know, I read that story last year and I talked about it on this show, which I thought was fascinating. The writer was making the case that if China went to 100% gold standard with the RMB, they don't need to buy any more gold at all because it would be a simultaneous devaluation because they have less gold than other countries, including the U.S. So they would simultaneously devalue and go to a gold standard at the same time. Per classic game theory, you see, the other countries would have to go also to a gold standard or risk capital flight as all the other currencies of the globe leave those countries and go to China to be invested in the only gold-backed currency in the world.
So the Chinese government has introduced all sorts of gold products for their citizens to buy in the past year. So this is part of the reason. But the article then goes on to quote John Nadler. And he's a definite contrarian indicator when he's very, he's a gold analyst at Kitco.com and very, very anti-gold. So his quotes are quite funny in here. Let's see. Let's scroll down to where he comes in, and he says that once again we have seen news that is but at the embryonic and certainly not fact supported stage at this point. Nadler also argues that China loves growth too much to switch to a gold standard. Forget about 8% growth. If China supports its currency with gold, then it will be forced to limit the amount of money in circulation, which could hurt the economy. This is a far-fetched dream by the gold bugs.
Yeah, well, you hear this argument all the time that, well, if you have a gold standard, you don't have growth, which is false, because whether you're on a gold standard or not has absolutely no effect whatsoever on technological innovation. Usually, technological innovation occurs under a rigid currency scheme where you don't have rampant credit inflation. The only innovation of note of the past 25 years has been the innovation in financial derivatives. Imagine if instead of all those engineers who left MIT and went to work on Wall Street, imagine if they went into manufacturing, architecture, engineering, and they actually innovated real products. It wouldn't matter what the ratio to gold or gold standard was, because the whole idea of, you know, under, you know, the Industrial Revolution happened during a, you know, Britain's gold standard. Britain was under a gold standard, and you had the Industrial Revolution. The fact that there was a gold standard, you know, mother is a necessity of invention. You know, how did these entrepreneurs, they wanted to create stuff that's going to grow, so they have to innovate. Mm-hmm. But if you can borrow money for 0% interest rates, and every time you engage in a speculation, you get bailed out by the government, and they just flood the money with more fiat currency. You don't have any innovation. You just have it's welfare. You become the fat cat welfare. Gold is Nadler is wrong on just so many different levels. He's been wrong about the direction of price for precious metals since we've been following him for 10 years. His insights, that he doesn't have any insight. I don't know what the point of this guy Nadler is. He's except for comical, he's like Chemical Ali or Baghdad Bob, you know, the propagandist in Iraq who while the country was being surrounded by U.S. Marines, was on TV saying how they were winning the war. You know, he's just like a failed propagandist. But for who? And why would Kitco, you know, bother to have this idiot, you know, spouting on and nonsensically? He hasn't said uttered a single worthy statement in 10 years, as far as I can tell.
Well, he is as entertaining. I laugh very hard, as much as I did, not quite as much as I did, but as Baghdad Bob.
Yeah. Well,
he's very funny. It's kind of, I especially go to read him when, on days like Friday, when silver is spiking hard, he gets filled with just rage and starts ranting angrily about how the price is going up and shouldn't.
You know, talk about price propaganda. And we talked about price and versus media and journalistic propaganda and information propaganda. Information propaganda through, you know, the old techniques of, you know, broadcasting propaganda has been replaced by technological information propaganda, by hacking into the algorithms that are responsible for channeling the information and rechanneling it in different ways to affect public opinion. Then you have financial propaganda with the quote stuffing and the high frequency trading and the algorithmic trading on Wall Street. And you also have in the area of, I forgot what I was going to say.
Quote stuffing, propaganda, price propaganda, talking about John Nadler.
Yeah, I forgot what I was going to say. It'll come back to me, though.
It'll come back to you. Okay, well, you know, speaking of propaganda, you made me think of Tony Blair, who was out there. He was the Baghdad Bob of the Egypt Revolution, because, of course, he was going on to U.S. television, well, where Piers Morgan has a television show. And he was saying that Mubarak, who is now in a coma, Mubarak was a courageous guy and a good friend. And so I was wondering where he is about Gaddafi, who's now gunning down, opening fire on his people who are revolted.
Well, he was rehabilitated by Tony Blair. Remember?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That he and the farting cows of Tripoli, remember when they were hanging out with the farting camels of Tripoli?
That's right. That's right.
That was a famous episode of ours on The Oracle.
That's right. He was rehabilitated, Gaddafi, because during the Pan Am bombing, the Lockerbie scandal, the poor guy was rotting away in a jail, and then he was released, and because of humanitarian reasons, and then it turned out that Blair had cut an energy deal under the table and to
enrich BP.
For BP.
Yeah, $1 billion deal.
Right.
All Gaddafi had to do is say that he was giving up his weapons of mass destruction program,
right,
which
right.
was non-existent. But he just said, "Oh, I'm giving it up.
I'm giving it up. It doesn't exist, but I'm giving it up." And with Blair, well, it's not so much blood for oil, because Tony Blair doesn't have any blood. It's more like snot for oil. You know, Tony Blair had the snot pounded out of him for oil, and that was the bargain he made.
Well, and again, speaking of Tony Blair and weapons of mass destruction, curveball. Yeah. You know, the informant who provided all the information about the mobile weapons labs. Well, he's admitted that he totally lied. He fabricated it all in order to get the Americans and Brits to invade Iraq.
Right, right. But that was known. I mean, when went in front of the UN with his vial of talcum powder and said, this is going to kill everybody, Colin Powell, who totally destroyed his career. You haven't heard a peep out of him since. They knew at that time that they were just engaged in massive propaganda. So the propaganda is, I know there was something I was going to talk about, something about propaganda.
Propaganda, people don't care about it. They don't seem to care once it's revealed.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. So propaganda in the financial arena, you know, the crash JP Morgan and buy silver campaign that we launched on the 11th of November on the Alex Jones Show in the U.S. when silver was at $26.50 an ounce. The massive buying of silver around the world has caused shortages of silver. It's hard to get silver in a lot of cities around the world now. They've run out of the silver. There's very little silver out. But it also caused backwardation in the silver futures market. And that was the people. You know, that's the equivalent of the riots in Cairo or the protests in Madison, Wisconsin. Backwardation is the people's rioting in the silver futures markets. That's what you did. That's what I did. That's what everyone involved in the crash J.P. Morgan buy silver campaign is to force it in backwardation. This is what guys like Jim Poplava or Kenneth, who else? Ken, who's the guy who wrote The Devil of Shekel Island? What's it? The monster from Jekyll Island, Griffiths. Okay, these people, they don't understand that the public, the globe's public, can force silver into backwardation, which is a form of reverse propaganda, which forces the silver vigilantes to act, because you can buy, you know, another thing that China is doing is that there's a clause apparently in the GLD and SLV ETFs on the exchanges, where if you're a big enough buyer of silver through these intermediaries, you can demand physical delivery of your silver. So apparently a big buyer of SLV and GLD is China, and they're going to be demanding physical delivery of the gold and silver. The number of contracts that are out there on the COMEX is exploding in volume, which is going to force covering of the buy side of that market in ways that are in excess of the inventory that they have in the COMEX warehouse by a shocking 20 or 30 times more than they actually have in the warehouse. Then you've got the Silver Liberation Army, the SLA. These are people around the world in all of the cities that are revolting against their kleptocratic governments, including in the United States. Everyone's buying silver and forcing the price into backwardation, forcing the vigilantes to act. And the price is now higher than it has ever been in the history. Because if you go back to the Hunt Brother cornering attempt in the 70s, the price got to $50 an ounce. But I look at the average monthly price for that month, and it was about $32.60. So we've gone above $32.60. So it's been on a monthly basis, it's now trading at its all-time high. On a nominal basis, it will shortly take out that $50 price. And then on an inflation-adjusted basis, the price should be around $120, $130. That will also be surpassed in the near future. And once we're in the triple figures, you'll see a parabolic move, and we're going to make an assault at that $500 price.
Bully, bully, Max. You know, so, by the way, the GOP passed their own austerity budget. They're calling it at 4:30 in the morning. This morning.
Yeah.
And they're pretending that they're like this big fiscal conservative sort of take care of the deficit. Well, it's a whopping $60 billion in cuts of the $3 trillion budget. So you see this real conundrum America's facing is that, well, you can't cut the military budget because Fox News won't let you. And then you can't cut Medicare or Social Security because, on the one hand, people have been paying 15% of their salary into that. But also, old people vote. Young people don't.
Well, the thing about Social Security is you don't need to cut Social Security because they're going to claim force majeure. One of these days, probably in the next 2 years, the government will simply say, we're sorry, but the Social Security is now finished. Because right now, I mean, there's no money in the Social Security Trust. It's all been borrowed against. There's just a bunch of IOUs in the Social Security Trust. There's no money there. And it's a pyramid scheme. It's the people coming in pay for the people going out. And the money coming in stopped covering the money going out already last year. And now it's obvious that there is actually no way to cover those expenses. So through a force majeure, they'll simply say, "We're sorry," but they don't have to do anything. They'll just say, "Look, there's no money," and then they can point to they can open up the safe and they can show everybody that it's empty. It's gone. There's nothing there. So they don't need to go through the machinations and the agony of having to try to stop, you know, do the whole political process, because they know there's nothing there anyway. So that's just, it's like a Bernie Madoff moment or an Enron moment. It's just one of those days when the Ponzi scheme is revealed as a Ponzi scheme and it's just over. It's done in a day. Enron collapsed $80 billion in a day. Bernie Madoff collapsed in a day. You know, these things, all it takes is a day and they're gone. They're history. It's finished. And that's what's going to happen to Social Security.
Yeah. And so we return to the budget. And the only bit that that anybody can cut is a very small one, part of the budget, which is the stuff that goes to poor people and
cut out funding for the arts. So you want to make it impossible for anyone to have a non copyright thought that you can charge them for. They cut out education. They cut out
EPA,
the environmental stuff, because of course machines don't need clean water or clean air or clean soil or clean food, or humans, robots don't need that stuff.
And since they cut 50% of the budget for home heating assistance for the elderly and the disabled. So they saved a whopping $1.5 billion from that out of a $3.6 trillion budget.
Well, the only thing that this budget's good for is, it seems, I hope it makes crystal clear in people's minds that there's a class war going on in the U.S. And if you're not at the dinner table with Mark Zuckerberg and the CEO of Google and Larry Ellison and Steve Jobs and the rest of the little high-tech confab they had in the White House this week, you're probably find yourself face down in the mud, sipping on some cheap gut rot gin, wondering what the heck happened to your country.
So let me read from Paul Craig Roberts, who is known as the father of Reaganomics. He was in the Reagan administration and the Treasury, and here's what he has to say about the budget as well. Given the magnitude of the U.S. budget deficit, these sums are pittance, the amount that they're cutting. The cuts will have no effect on U.S. Treasury financing needs. They will put no brake on the Federal Reserve's need to print money in order to keep the U.S. government in operation. These cuts serve one purpose: to further the Republican Party's myth that America is in economic trouble because of the poor, that the poor are shiftless, they won't work. The only reason unemployment is high is that the poor had rather be on welfare. A new addition to the welfare myth is that recent middle-class college grads won't take the jobs offered to them because their parents have too much money and the kids like living at home without anything to do. A spoiled generation, they come out of university refusing any job that doesn't start out a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. The reason that engineering graduates do not get job interviews is that they do not want them. This is the myth.
Well, I mean, look.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I wanted to talk. I'm going to finish what he's saying, and then we'll talk about it because we have about 12 minutes left. What all this leads to is an assault on entitlements, which means Social Security and Medicare. The elites have programmed, through their control of the media, a large part of the population, especially those who think of themselves as conservatives, to conflate entitlements with welfare. America is going to hell not because of foreign wars, they think, that serve no American purpose, but because people who have paid 15% of their payrolls all of their lives for old age pensions and Medicare want handouts in their retirement years. Why do these selfish people think that working Americans should be forced through payroll taxes to pay for the pensions and medical care of the retirees? Why didn't the retirees consume less and prepare for their own retirement, goes the propaganda. The elite's line and that of their hired spokesperson in think tanks, quote-unquote think tanks, he writes them in, as I always do, and universities, is that America is in trouble because of the retirees. Too many Americans have been brainwashed to believe that America is in trouble because of its poor and retirees. So, again, he's mentioning that the people who say they're conservative. So, well, how many comments are we going to get from so-called Tea Party people who say they're Tea Party and they're conservative?
Yeah, well, it's a tried and true
method
to when people are stealing, you have ethnic cleansing, or when one part of the population is victimizing another part of the population, they characterize them as vermin or rats, shiftless, lazy. In America, we saw it with the American Indian. I've seen it with the black African population that was brought over to do all the work and build all the wealth for no money in return. We've seen it throughout history. And now in America, because of deflation, because the market has collapsed, because of peak credit, because of peak oil, because of peak water, there's a scramble for what's left. And the people with the guns and the money are blaming the people who that they stole the money from. They're blaming the victim, you know. They're blaming the victim. And they're doing it on an institutional level, and the mass media supports it, and we've seen it before. And this generally leads to enormous social unrest that we're having in cities around the world. There's a global insurrection against the banker occupation. There's class wars erupting all over the world. It's happening right now. We're in the war. It's happening.
Well, I coined a phrase when we were on the metro today of the collective Gaddafi that you see in the U.S. is in the U.S., they look at these, they see the Middle East protests as something different somehow, like these people are rising up against dictators. But in their own country, they themselves want to suppress and repress the population because of the mass propaganda, mostly through Fox and those sort of right wing, as you know, Paul Craig Roberts himself, a conservative, he's identified it as coming from the so-called, you know, people who identify themselves as conservative, that they are the ones that seem to be the most brainwashed in this regard economically.
Yeah, that's right. And but there's a limit to how much money you can steal and how much of a problem you can create, because there is a limit to this, and we've reached the limit. So now groups in the UK like Uncut and some other groups that are forming and amassing are now in the process of rebalancing the economy for real, because the government talks about rebalancing the economy, but they just pay lip service to this idea while they are servicing the kleptocrats. So groups like Uncut in the UK and others have to take on the task of rebalancing the economy for real. And that means getting in people's faces. That means doing what has to be done to bring about at least some modicum of social justice. And so artistically, we've been saying, you know, to spur the troops on, there'll be more of a dynamic, politically oriented musical scene, which, you know, the UK is ready to go with that. Of course, the music's always going to be a big part of it, and the arts will be a big part of it. And there'll be, you know, revolution. Certainly there'll be, we've had cultural revolutions and artistic revolutions and political revolutions and financial revolutions and technological revolutions. And we've had many, many revolutions and different types and stripes. And some are bloody, some are not. Facebook, the launch of Facebook was not a bloody revolution. It was a technological digital revolution, which spurred on WikiLeaks and spurred on the quiet revolution in Egypt. So we're having the revolution in the U.S. and it's happening on Cut and others in the U.K. There's a revolution in the U.K. So the revolution's on. It's happening right now.
The revolution's on. And before we go, I want to update. Barclays branches targeted in protests against tax avoiding. U.K. Uncut mounts direct action against 50 branches as Barclays admits it's paid only 1% corporation tax in 2009.
Well, remember, you know, Barclays was involved in the apartheid and anti-apartheid movement. They, through boycotting Barclays, was one of the number one most pervasive ways that apartheid was stopped in South Africa. So I'm not surprised that Barclays is once again at the center of a massive social unrest.
Here they're saying there are 10 different protests currently underway in central London, with protesters staging a live stand-up comedy show, a breakfast club for children, and setting up a library. Ruth Griffith, 36, a UK Uncut supporter, said, quote, "Today we are transforming the banks into schools, leisure centers, and libraries and forests, because it is society that's too big to fail, not a broken banking system."
Well, they're right. You know, we've been wondering on 5 years when the public would wake up. And it just woke up 6 months ago. I forget what the event was, but suddenly they were. I think it was the Vodafone protest, and they're in the shops at Vodafone and Topshops. And that we were like, wow, it happened. You know, we said it was going to happen for 5 years. It happened, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger. And the bankers are entrenching. You know, they're hardening their position, and it's a war. It's a class war, social war, currency war. And it's a war that's now, you can't go back at this point. The genie's out of the bottle. And it's a war that's a global war. It's the first global insurrection against bankers that's ever happened. It's been regional before, but it's never been global. And it's generally the same bank. And certainly Mervyn King the counterpart of Ben Bernanke in the U.S., you know, Mervyn King in the Bank of England, really going back to 15, I think it was 1596 when they created the Bank of England, was really the beginning of this colonization through financial ledger domain. You know, he's at the root of it. So all of these actions ultimately will go to Bank of England. I guess that's all we have time for.
Yeah, so Max, say goodbye, y'all.